found this in Gunnerum. Gunnermir ni.
What is it?
Well, it's a performance.
Welcome to Synthaholics, guys. This is David Duncan. With me is my co-host,
Brick Fontaine. It had to be you. It had to be you.
Oh, did it now?
I wandered around and finally found somebody who...
Nice singing voice.
Thank you.
And today we also have another special person with us today. And not really a guest as far as like an interview goes, but we have Faith with us, who will just join us for this episode.
Cool. Say hi, Faith.
Hi.
Special guest co-host, Faith. So, today, of all days, is Wednesday, May 13th of the recording. I know this doesn't come out till Sunday, so it's like kind of like looking back into the past.
What's that special day there, Dave?
It's actually a sad day. It's like it's almost like
the saddest day ever.
It's something very similar to the saddest day ever. Star Trek went off the air on television. It has been gone for 10 years today.
10 years the date.
The last episode of Enterprise, where it was basically a Next Generation holodeck episode.
I do remember. I don't remember what happened that day. But I do remember when it did go off the air, and it was very depressing. I was depressed.
I think the most depressing part is that it was canceled, and then now it's been 10 years and nothing except for two movies, which some people highly debate. What do you think, Faith?
It's a new branch off, but it's nothing like what we used to have. It would be nice to go back to what we used to have once more instead of this new alternative.
Yeah, I mean, you can only squeeze so much in one movie, and then after that, it just gets silly. I mean, it's like you need to have these episodes where you can like explore characters and topics, and you just don't get that in a movie. You only can talk about so much.
Exactly, and Star Trek's always best on television. I'm sorry, I interrupted you, Faith.
No, Star Trek was all about exploration, exploring new things. Where are the new things?
They've been on Earth for like two movies. Like, let's save Earth.
Let's keep saving Earth. That's what we do.
Because Earth is the only thing in the whole universe that could possibly be in danger.
Yeah, it's weird because that show Enterprise had so many legs, you know, that it was really ready to take off as a one man army, and it's too bad it got cut off at the knees by the. By the studios, so that's the thing that really, really gets me because we've talked on previous podcasts on how the audience got together and they raised money, and this was before Kickstarter and those other forums were out there. So I mean, that's pretty monumental in my mind that everyone could get together to talk about that to get that money put together to try to get another season, and yet the studio still shut it down. So
people are throwing money at Star Trek left and right. We talked about this on our Future of Star Trek episode, where Kickstarters are going all over the place. And speaking of Kickstarters, there's actually a relatively new one on there for a Captain Pike like pilot with a movie.
Yeah, looks
component.
Good.
And the casting looks amazing. We've got Robert Picardo from Voyager, Ray Wise. We've got Linda Park from Enterprise.
I am so excited if Ray Wise is in there. Him being Leland from Twin Peaks is literally probably one of the greatest little parts out there because he plays, you know, this evil dad, but he doesn't know he's evil. And, oh, it's just great. It's going to be, if that takes place, it's going to be awesome. Very, very cool.
All right. So we actually have our first like fan email, if you want to go ahead and...
Yeah, we got this email
to read.
Yeah, from Esper Frey. Sorry if I mispronounced that, Esper. She writes, listening to your third podcast now, talking about what Star Trek should be, how about if the studios start with three missions, defending the United Federation of Planets, First Contact, and law enforcement, and break the show into something like an old NBC mystery movie with three prediction crew cast producing simultaneously. So she's got these three different ideas. Star Trek Watchtower, the USS Watchtower, is a flagship at the three-way border of the Klingon Empire, the Romulan Empire, and the United Federation of Planets. And Admiral Pengelly and her fleet prowl the border, watching and waiting for one of the bad guys to blink. The next is Star Trek Sarek. The USS Sarek is a long-range first political contact ship. The big Federation telescopes start the sorting of stars and worlds. When a likely target is found, an unmanned probe is sent, and if it finds that there's a sentient life form in that system, the Sarek is sent to see if first contact should be made. That's a cool idea. The Star Trek Yamato, as she puts here, the CCC Yamato is a law enforcement ship of the four Earth colonies, occupying three neighboring star systems, have banded together and declared their independence and sued for their own seat on the Federation Council. But now they will need to supply their own coast guards in space. The dilemma is that one of the worlds is one of the only five worlds in the UPF that is where a Cretan recreational and a very illegal plant can be grown. So drug runners indeed need to be interested. Recreational rocket jockeys stranded in the asteroid belts need to be saved. And Star Trek Academy follows the drama of cadets of the Starfleet Academy. So doing it this way, the production crews have months between delivery dates and keep the quality as high as Roddenberry strove for. So she's got a couple great ideas, like basically taking three different shows and then rotating them or putting them in different seasons and having them somehow tie together, it seems like. A lot of great ideas. I love the idea of the USS Sarek as a ship trying to make first contact with sentient life forms that should be made. So that's pretty cool.
What do you think, Faith?
I think the Sarek idea is pretty good. I'm not so sure about a law enforcement version of Star Trek, but... that, you know, that's not exactly what you look for when you're trying to watch Star Trek, but the cadet idea, that'd be really cool to see what happens through training, maybe following them through the training exercises and graduation and all of that and getting a better insight there.
Yeah, I think you're right. I haven't seen a crew grow and seeing what they do and how they progress or how they completely fail.
I'm just wondering about illegal drugs, because, I mean, it seems like the Federation's a pretty free place to live, and... on the Valiant, the DS9 episode where there's a clone of the Defiant, where they're all hopped up on drugs. So drugs seems pretty okay.
Yeah, they don't seem overly concerned about things like that.
Yeah, it's one thing strange because Roddenberry tried to move away from the drugs things, but you got to imagine drugs are still there. I mean, I don't see how they could get away from it even in their future time period, even with the higher evolved mental state of man. I still think there'd still be people out there experimenting with drugs.
I mean, going back to City on the Edge of Forever, I mean, that shock that Bones gave to Sulu was probably LSD. Well, he injected himself. It was probably a more powerful version of LSD.
Well,
combinations thereof.
Well, when Ellison wrote A City on the Edge of Forever,
he was on LSD.
Yeah, he was on LSD. Man, I got a great script, guys. This is so freaking amazing. You gotta try this stuff.
And this is why he was so upset Gene Roddenberry changed it.
Well, the actually original script was that he actually had a drug addict on the Enterprise. It wasn't McCoy who shot himself full of drugs by accident. He actually beamed out of the planet trying to get these drugs. So that got changed from the original. That script went through a lot of rewrites, and Ellison, it really... it really pissed him off, actually. So
so instead of a junkie, you've got an accidental shoot-up.
That's probably why the whole thing kind of falls apart a little bit in the beginning. But after that, it's all right.
That's so great.
Still one of my favorite episodes.
Oh, that's good.
So, so drugs, I think, is going to be a part of our future no matter what. In fact, some people even think that drugs is one of the things that kept that started man onto a higher consciousness from just being animals, that we might have maybe threw some plants in the fire when we were trying to stay warm. We got a little high off it, and maybe that changed our brain chemistry forever.
Just ask Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah. Well, this happened before him. So.
Oh, yeah, I know. I mean, like, you know, people have to experiment for these things to work right.
I think, when I think of drugs, I think of Jim Morrison. That guy is way out there.
All right, cool. So,
Dave's like, moving on.
We do actually have a topic today.
What? No. Do we ever have a topic?
Theoretically. I mean, they're usually loosely based on the titles of the episode.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. We do. Talk about our topic, Dave.
Well, you see, on the show, we launched saying we're an everything Star Trek podcast.
Everything.
And everything. Like TV, movies, comics, all the shows. We've even dabbled in the animated series, you know, and dabbled in the comics, and I've read a couple of the books. I do want this to be an everything Star Trek podcast. And to this point, unfortunately, we failed on that front, where we have pretty much neglected Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and Enterprise. I mean, we've talked about each of them like a little bit. Voyager probably the least, but poor Captain Janeway. I'm sure she's crying into a giant cup of coffee.
No, she's just giving you the death stare from afar. It's okay, you'll feel it soon.
Over a cup of coffee.
Exactly. The last cup of coffee on the ship.
That she squeezed Neelix's neck to get.
You will give this to me or else.
Give me the goddamn coffee, Neelix!
I don't care if I'm over my replicator rations. Your homemade stuff is horrible.
You're the shittiest cook in the whole universe!
Do you want to survive the next month? You will give me the coffee now.
7 of 9 was actually a better cook than me.
7 of 9 could do anything better.
And she called food supplemental, 762.
Nourishing. This is nourishing.
So
she's had a better database.
Oh yeah, everything is a number to her, which is pretty good because instead of you know having to catalog that, she's already got a catalog for you.
Yeah.
So,
the topic.
No.
What is the topic?
We're going to keep putting the topic on.
Just have everyone guessing.
You know, we've teased the Klingon episode. Do that again.
We just lost like 5 listeners right now. They're just like, I'm done.
When they regain consciousness, I'll be back.
So this is still not the Klingon episode. It is going to come. It's just we want to put some research into it, so it's not this episode. This episode, we're actually going to review a Deep Space Nine episode, Bada Bing, Bada Bang.
Yeah.
In this episode, it's a holodeck episode, but what do you guys normally expect from a holodeck episode? Just give me like a rundown of what you think. What first thing that comes to the mind when you hear holodeck?
Oh, I already know. I'll let you go first, Faith, if there's anything you want to throw out there.
Oh, let's go neutral territory first. Historical representations of books we know.
Oh, nice. See, I was going to go there. My just thing is the holograms always go crazy and they try to escape from the holodeck.
But this is not a like sequel stories. To Robot Sounds Wild.
I know.
No, I'm just letting everyone else know. You know, Faith knows. But,
yeah,
but yeah, that's why we're with neutral territory.
Yeah, no, but that's actually interesting. Yeah, the representation of literature and what people is like. Let's reenact Shakespeare.
Okay, so if that's the first thing you think of on a holodeck episode, what's the second thing you think about on a holodeck episode, other than reenactments of things past, so we don't have to spend money on sci-fi props?
All the times the power fails.
Oh, yeah. That happens, too. She's right.
And
that actually made me nervous about going on a holodeck. Oh shit, something's going to go every time it's, like, it's going to stop.
It's the safest thing until everything goes wrong. It's like getting stuck in an elevator or something like that.
Except right? The elevator well, safety protocols don't usually turn off.
Yeah, and try to kill right? you. So this is a holodeck episode.
Yes, this is a holodeck episode, but where it goes out of control, it's working as intended.
Yeah, I actually like that idea. So why don't we give a rundown of the episode, and then we'll talk about our thoughts on the whole thing.
All right, imagine Las Vegas sometime in the
1962
'62. Yeah, anyway. Sometime in the past in Las Vegas. You've got the suave singer guy sitting with two of our regulars, O'Brien and Bashir.
Vic Fontaine.
He is, for a holodeck character, he's probably one of my favorites.
He's basically Frank Sinatra.
And he's got a great voice, too, which makes it better. So they're talking about going to the Davy Crockett thing. And
The Alamo!
So he opens up and he's like, oh, I don't really want to go with you guys. I'll stay here. I'm happy here singing my songs. So he sings them a song about the Alamo. And then all of a sudden, it gets way more crowded than it used to be.
Everything turns really blue really quickly.
And really red.
Yeah. So the dancing girls come out and they upstage poor Vic.
Oh, just with their hands. That's like, woo, all the whistling and the hurrah. And like, get off the stage, dude.
Hip swivel him right off the back of it.
Yeah, he was not needed. He was just pushed right off. Once girls show up on the stage, nobody wanted him.
Nobody wanted him, even if he had a sexy voice. If only the girl climbed on top of the piano.
Yeah.
Then, you know, maybe it would have worked.
I kind of thought Bashir was going to be like, thank you, finally. Bashir being the biggest pervert on the whole show.
He evens out a little bit.
Actually, I have to talk about Odo later because I thought that was odd. But
oh, okay, yeah, I actually wanted to talk about that too.
But no, let's go on.
That'll be after after the synopsis.
So synopsis. So it turns blue, the dancing girls show up, and who is behind all this?
Yo, it's Nikki Eyes here.
Frankie Eyes!
Nikki, whatever. It's got the eyes.
He's got the eyes.
The eyes.
It's Frankie Eyes.
Anyway, Frankie Eyes shows up with his Cheech. And you know, Brian's, you know, being the tech guy, he's like, oh, I'm just gonna delete these buttholes. I'm just gonna delete these guys because you know they're ruining, Vic Fontaine's.
Yeah, Vic Fontaine, who's the beloved hologram of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. So it doesn't work.
Right. So, but they can't be deleted. They won't be deleted. So
we get the credits. when the deletion doesn't work, we get the credits.
Just the whole thing ends.
Yeah, it's the opening credits, not the ending credits.
Right.
Anyway, going on, we have them talking in ops, and they're like, "Oh man, this stuff happened to Vic Fontaine." We got other than Bashir and Orion, we've got Nog, we've got Dax. And Kira, and they're all really sad that Vic Fontaine's has taken over, and they try to formulate a plan. And Sisko comes out and is like, get to work.
Yeah, he didn't. Sisko doesn't have any love for Vic Fontaine.
He's a stick in the mud.
Yeah, he really doesn't. He doesn't care about any of that. So they contact, who was the guy who created the, I can't remember his name right now. I can't remember his name.
You watched this most recently, Faith. It was mere hours ago.
No, I don't remember. Wait, actually, I could wiki.
That's cheating! You just watched it a couple hours ago. It's been over 24 hours for me. I'm letting them
know. I sure remember his name, though.
Well, the programmer of this hologram program put something they call a jack-in-the-box. And it's basically a kind of a little test to mix it up for anybody who's enjoying the holosuite.
So apparently the writer really liked Ocean's 11.
Yeah, it's actually, it has, but I don't know if they meant it to be Ocean's 11, but they had to figure a way to get him out, and this is their answer to it.
The programmer didn't, but the writer, the person who actually wrote the episode
Yeah, the writer
was definitely going for that.
Yeah. So they just, the programmer has told them that they need to get rid of Frankie Eyes, and then everything
in the,
will,
in the period way. You can't shoot him with a phaser.
Yeah, you can't just come in and just, like, you know, shoot a torpedo into the hologram.
And the problem is, if the mob gets mad and retaliates and you don't wipe this thing out at once, Vic Fontaine will be dead and deleted from the program completely,
right.
Which seems totally backwards to the point of Vic Fontaine, since he was programmed to be a self-aware hologram and be happy that he was self-aware.
Right, and it's strange how many of the people are all like, Vic Fontaine, I'd do anything for that guy.
Even Cassidy Yates, the love of Benjamin Sisko.
I know. She was like, who, I love Vic Fontaine.
And Sisko's all being grumpy at dinner. And
who the hell is Vic Fontaine? Who you been talking to?
Who you been sleeping with?
So, that all being said, they just decide they're going to figure this out, and they are going to get rid of Frankie Eyes.
Sisko goes into some racist stuff that black people were oppressed in this time period, and Cassidy Yates, not Starfleet, who used to be Maquis, whose morals are probably slightly more questionable than Sisko's, comes to him, and she puts him in his place. And I'm just like, why isn't, you know, Federation guy, you know, move beyond this racism thing, and I want to talk more about that later after the description of the episode. But she basically puts him in his place. All the cast goes to Vix, and they're talking the plan. They need a high roller to come in and to make a show so they can distract people, so they can do the Ocean's 11 heist.
They're going to steal all the money from the casino, and when Frankie Eyes' boss shows up, he's going to come in and find that the safe is empty, and he will then vanish from the casino, and that will be the end of the Jack in the Box program.
Esri tries out for a bunny suit outfit and is hired immediately, so she could be a waitress during the heist. Bashir plays a low roller who orders martinis and does a James Bond joke and says he would like it
stirred, not shaken. Bashir gets it wrong.
So apparently he's not a fan of James Bond. James Bond did it wrong. You heard it here first, guys.
Oh, boy. prepare for hate mail.
It'd be better than just, like, you know, the one email we've gotten, so that's awesome.
At least somebody's talking to us.
Exactly. You know, tell us how to improve. Tell us how to not bash James Bond. And then we've got Nog, who with his giant ears is, of course, a safecracker. That's kind of a race.
Of course, the Ferengi's going to break into the safe and steal all the money.
Oh, yeah, that's just like two-tone, you know, like racism there. Big
right,
ears,
right.
And he's after the money.
I know.
Odo's the bag man because Odo can disguise himself as the plate Ezri is holding. I want to be that plate.
I'm actually a dancer. And then, they'll walk out with the money.
Cassidy Yates is going to distract the guard because she went in there and told him how he looked like a football player that she used to know in high school.
And had a crush on him.
And talked about all the things she wished she would have done to him.
That guard was like, oh yeah. So the plan does go through.
And Kira plays a really good part where she is the distraction of the new owner of this casino.
Yeah.
She wears a couple really nice slinky dresses, loses horrible at 21, and
blackjack, yeah.
She loses horrible at blackjack, and then the guy likes her so much he's insulting the dealer. It's like, why can't you make her get 21?
What the hell is your problem?
She's too good to not get 21. And it's a few quirky lines, and they're...
Actually, that was a good exchange between those two right there when they first meet. I liked the exchange. I thought that was cleverly written.
Oh, yeah.
And acted well, too.
Oh, yeah. The whole episode was really, really well written. Very Ocean's 11. So everyone's got their job. But, oh, and Bashir, as he orders the martini, he's supposed to, like, squirt some, you know, diarrhea medicine.
Diarrhea medicine. Yeah, right. So... okay, so the plan goes almost as planned, except for one problem.
Actually, two problems. What do you mean one problem?
Well, there's actually two problems.
Every single person's job goes wrong, except for Odo.
Well, yeah, I know.
Odo was a plate, and then he wasn't. So, I mean, his job was fine.
I did my job! Well, my thing was actually they just put too much on Nog.
Oh, he's the safe cracker. It's like, oh man, this is gonna be so easy. This is like old technology.
And they just couldn't get it.
It's got like a reverse tumbler lock or something.
Yeah,
on it. It's like,
yeah.
The one I practiced on didn't have that. And it took him like in the practice, it took him like 2 or 3 minutes to
He was like, did it.
To get that. Yeah. And then like he like this one is supposedly harder and he fails like 16 times.
I think when Ferengis were like children, they're all given a safe and they just have to learn how to crack it.
This is your rite of passage.
That's right. It's like, you know, we're given rattles and blocks. They're given safes to crack when they're like, you know, like, only infants.
We put a gold bar of Plas Latinum in this safe. You have to open it up
to win mommy's approval
and to go over to other people's houses, because to respect them, you've got to give them the slip of platinum to even enter the house.
That's right. That's right.
Love Ferengi culture. Like, I love to get people go over. Oh yeah, pay me. You're using some of my electricity, probably some of my water. Yeah, just give me a little bit of
little platinum.
Gold Crest Latinum.
Latinum. What else happens? Oh, the owner. What's his name? Oh, damn. Zemo. Zemo shows up.
Zemo. Yeah, he's supposed to come. He comes. Yeah, he comes early. Like, everything that can possibly goes wrong goes
he's
wrong.
He's literally a day early. He's not even supposed to be there.
Except for Odo again. Odo is perfect. He's a plate, and then he's not.
Yeah, he did it. He did it right. Good job, Odo.
The guy orders the martini, and then someone bumps into Ezri. She knocks over her martinis. Good thing Bashir has been looking at this other waitress the entire night. And it notices she's got two martinis, so she thanks
steals
her,
it.
Steals them, gives it to Ezri, puts in the diarrhea medicine. Ezri goes in to the... To the banker guy who's counting the money.
It's the wrong guy.
And it's not the dude. He's got the flu. Apparently he got the diarrhea medicine from somebody else.
Right. So it all went wrong. And
she's like, oh, I'm so thirsty. I'm so tired. And he didn't want to drink it. So she's like, oh, maybe I can have it. And he's like, oh, she shouldn't be working on the job. So he downs it.
Yeah. Yeah. He was a prick.
Anyway, he runs out needing the number two pretty hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
What happens next, Faith?
I just got lost on how many times he tried to crack the safe and failed.
Yeah, that's...
I was just waiting for it. It's just every single time there's Odo providing traditional moral support that he provides.
Hurry up! Come on, Nog!
It's almost time, Nog.
It's 8 minutes! You should have been done by now.
Haven't you done it yet?
Oh, come on. You're just a Ferengi. What did I expect from a Ferengi?
I know.
Cassidy Yates is falling over this guy who she, you know, thought used to be
on
a football team, who she was just, you know, trying to get him to look at her between the levers. And she accuses O'Brien of stealing her money.
Right.
And
this is where it all goes wrong for O'Brien.
Oh, yes.
O'Brien gets pulled in the back.
First strip search. Nothing good ever happens to O'Brien.
And O'Brien never speaks of this again.
Oh, he's so mad at
But develops end. A drinking habit afterward.
He was drinking. This is the end of season 7. He's been drinking since he married Keiko and TNG.
Yeah, but now he's got a reason.
Yeah, now he's really got
a
reason.
All right, now he has a reason, okay?
Yeah.
It took him long enough to find one, at least let him have it.
Yeah,
right?
He went through the Cardassian War fine. Wasn't he a prisoner of war in the Cardassian War, too?
He was a prisoner of war. He got sentenced to 20 years in this other jail.
Oh, yeah,
in his mind. You know, we've got the segment Riker scores, Harry Kim fails. I'm pretty sure lots of O'Briens are going to go in the fails category. Unfortunately, he didn't fail, but we're going to make it look like he did because,
well,
we need it for the segment most of all. But second of all, he doesn't really fail because all this stuff is out of his control.
It's totally out of his control.
He is just like a little pebble or little floaty thing on the water
on
some crazy river.
He's over at the bottom of the hill, man.
Oh, man. He's, it's like...
Somebody kicked that sucker from 10 miles up and he's just waiting.
He's waiting for it to roll.
Yeah, right. Well, fortunately, it does work out for him.
Sisko starts, as the high roller, starts throwing money around to distract everybody. Vic makes the moves on this girl who looks like she could be the granddaughter of Zemo, and is talking about how she looks in the bikini, and is all trying to make the moves on her to distract him. Sisko starts throwing money because he's the high roller, distracted everybody. The caper goes off with about 20 hitches, but it goes off. And they get escorted out of the building. Zemo and Cheech and the Eyes.
Yeah, Frankie Eyes.
They all get taken out, and then it resets to normal.
Yeah, and then it goes back to normal. And then we have a wonderful rendition of The Best Is Yet to Come. And Benjamin Sisko, I think, has a better voice than Vic Fontaine.
It was really good, and it seemed really out of character considering how he was stuck in racism for the first half of the episode.
He was just waiting to be...
No, sexist. That's why he was stuck, man. He was trying to hide his own nature.
That's right. He was just trying to sing.
He fit so well with that the time era with his voice that, you know, had to deny it.
Oh, it's like, I can't do it. Can't do it.
If I sing, they'd know I'm really a softy inside.
They'll never take me seriously again. Good thing it's near the end of the show.
We only have a few more episodes left.
It's fine. It's fine.
They already knew he was a teddy bear.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway, they enjoy him singing, and the episode's over. So what were some things you thought were really interesting about the episode?
Me? I like the Jack-in-the-Box idea. I thought that was a clever idea for just a hologram kind of show. Because it's always the holograms going awry. This wasn't them going awry. This was just an actual part of the program.
This was working as intended. Yeah. Have holodecks ever worked right?
Right. No, but this is actually kind of cool. And I like that it was actually a threat to Vic Fontaine that he might not actually ever show up again. So, I mean, that was cool. And then, secondly, I thought that, I mean, the Ocean's 11 callback was fun in its own way. But I did like, I just like the caper of itself. And I just love that Nog was such a, just couldn't get it together. I was just laughing the whole time.
And he kept insisting it was going to be so easy.
This is so easy. I could do this with my hands tied behind my back.
Turning the tumbler with his teeth.
With my toes. So those are things I enjoyed most of all.
What about you, Faith?
I did like the plot device because it was an interesting way of pulling everybody in the crew in together and forcing them to work together in non-traditional means. But more than anything, I liked watching Sisko evolve as a person and becoming, you know, getting past and acknowledging his prejudices and then learning to work around it. And then, you know, getting to see that side of him that was really good as a performer and getting to listen to him sing. So, I mean, you know, just that progression was just amazing to watch.
Yeah, I like that, too. I like that he actually went up and sang, and he came from that, like, stodgy guy to the, like, you know, hey, yes, lounge singer.
The hipster. Yeah. He just braced it. That was nice. That was really good to see him open up as a captain.
I liked that he had an arc, and I liked that he changed, and I liked that he went on the holodeck and helped his crew do what they wanted to do in their free time. It's great that they had this camaraderie where they'd spend time together when they weren't at work. Just the message of Star Trek in general, I don't think he should have been so hung up about the racist stuff. Geordi never talked about racism. Guinan never talked about racism. I know Guinan was an alien, but she did live in the South, like with Mark Twain.
Right.
Or like in California or whatever. But like, anyway, I mean, that's still like, you know, a really racist period of time. And so she would have seen, you know, what happened to slaves and stuff like that. And she never brought it up. No one ever brought it up. And that's how it should have been, because they're beyond that in Star Trek. And I just felt like a step backwards a little bit to me.
I felt that Sisko's thing that he talked about there too, he was also talking how it was that the hologram wasn't truly representing racism at the time. That because it's been sort of whitewashed in the hologram program, and that and that kind of pissed him off, that didn't truly represent the time.
Why would he want it to? Does he want to walk in and get called the N-word and be like, you know,
I don't know. I think he thinks that if we kind of like we scrub away the past, we're doomed to repeat it. So
or he'll just go back in time and kill the guy so he can take the guy's place. Well, no, and
that's
do it.
That's a different episode.
Oh yeah, that's right. Sorry.
But that's But I think he has a slight point, and the other side of it is to, you know, you got to remember that this, you know, when this episode is written, you know, we're literally only about at that time, you know, was it 95, 96? I can't remember when it probably came out, but I mean, this was
season 7, so it would have been like
it was in the '90s,
like late '90s, probably.
Yeah. But I mean, we're literally only like 30 years since the civil rights movement. So, you know, I think they're still making a statement at the time that he didn't like that. I even wonder if, you know, sometimes the actors had input in the writing. Maybe he had something
almost
to say.
Not at all in Deep Space Nine.
Really?
Deep Space Nine was extremely rigid. They had to basically, if they wanted to make a change, they had to ask months in advance.
Really?
They couldn't change, you know, an A to a Z. Like, it was, like, biblical. Like, you cannot change this.
Huh. Interesting.
If you said it wrong, new take. Start over. We gotta get it to how the script says. Next Generation, they actually had a lot more say. And I think because the actors kind of had so much sway in the Next Generation, I think they wanted to take it. They wanted to... And it was also a very different show, the Next Generation, so they wanted to take it away. I don't know how the other shows were. I think they might have loosened up a little bit.
Right.
But I don't know for sure.
Well, I just think that's where he was coming from as a character. I think that he thought if you whitewash that away, you're not going to remember what actually accurately happened. I mean, if you go and watch the original 1960s Ocean 11, you know, Sammy Davis Jr., he only drove a garbage truck in that. So Benjamin Sisko's not completely incorrect.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm just saying this is something we've moved past in Star Trek, and I just seemed...
I don't doubt that.
It just seemed like it was kind of weird. But, I mean, it was nice that he had the arc. It just seems out of place to bring like, you know, that kind of racism in.
I don't think it was so much about racism as it was about an actual plot hook, about showing what he was saying about the transparency. Because with the Federation, there's usually a lot of transparency in history instead of, well, let's sweep this under the rug and pretend it didn't happen.
Right.
There's a lot more upfront honesty about the way things are handled, and it might be more a political statement than it is so much about race and gender.
Right.
And I think it just... That they were just trying to make a political statement that there's adversity.
Yeah, I think on Memory Alpha they were kind of giving an audience like the the character shoes, like, you know, that way you can kind of understand what's going on. I guess for people who maybe aren't as familiar with, you know, Star Trek's lore and that going around, he was kind of the side protagonist, sort of, like,
yeah,
through the character.
He was a holdout. I didn't have a biggest thing. I see where you're coming from, but I also didn't. It didn't mean as much to me, honestly. In the end, I just thought it was like he was a little stodgy, and he didn't want to be part of it. And then he kind of came around when he just saw that everybody was like, "Come on, just do it," you know. So
I'm gonna do it for the team.
Yeah. Yeah.
One thing I really loved about the episode was how they redid the Deep Space Nine theme and kind of a 60s swing jazz music. That was really cool. I really liked that a lot.
That was different.
And just, it's nice that they spent money on, you know, recomposing some music. That was really cool, I thought.
Yeah, there were some cool parts to it. It's a fun episode. It's fun to see these characters in those kind of periods. At least it's not like Victorian period, which I just hate so bad.
Oh, you mean when Janeway is the night nurse to little kids, to the guy she kind of likes?
The governess.
Oh, the governess.
The governess. That drives me crazy.
With their pinky up in the air.
Oh, why couldn't they put her anywhere? I mean, it doesn't have to be Wuthering Heights. Come on. It could be anything.
Put her in World War II, where she's like,
no, it doesn't be in World War II, but I mean, jeez. I don't know. The same thing with... when Beverly Crusher went to the new Scotland thing, it had this like Victorian thing. It's like, why does all the time they have a woman like sideshow thing? It has to be, you know, a Victorian period.
I think this is a question for fans.
Yes, please.
It's because of the corsets.
Is that what it is? I mean, is that,
it has to be.
Do they to wear the corsets?
Yeah, I mean, I thought women hated that.
They just want to. Well, no, it's.
But men are writing the episodes.
How many men are in the production of this? And then ask that question again. Then you
almost
can
completely.
Yeah, so that would be why. But no, it's I do remember in the books that that's where the women tended to go to, were these romantic areas and that, and it's just, it's, for me, it feels like a lack of imagination. But for aesthetics, I mean, a woman in a corset is a very romantic idea.
I'm not disagreeing there. I just, you know, is that, do you find, you know, just as a woman, if you were to put yourself in any time period, would you pick the Victorian age?
No, she's put herself in Dixon Hill. She'd be a secretary.
I don't know. Can we do the H.G. Wells version? I mean, like, can we go Cthulhu on this? And yeah, I'd be down with the Victorian era.
I don't know if I want to go in Cthulhu land.
Like, I'd be okay with that. But no, it's, you know, I like that idea, but why not do something adventurous?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you, too. I think it should, I mean, I don't know. It's, I remember, you know, Wuthering Heights and just reading.
Stodgy.
It's just like, oh my God, you know?
Little Women. If you're going to do that, do something like Little Women or something with some passion.
I know. It's just like, you know, Heathcliff was just this guy who was just this jerk who just brooded over his love, and then he didn't do anything in the end. He just, and then he was all pissed off that he didn't get his girl. I mean, it's like, oh my God, stop.
Kind of so in the Victorian era.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty much. I mean, no, it was, no. Something more passionate would have been nice to see for the women, at least.
Yeah, I agree. I would just, and that's another thing is, like, you know, one with any sci-fi, especially Star Trek, they just always go back to certain time periods. Did you ever notice?
Oh, it's always a different time period. That way, like I said,
but it's always like props. It's either like the 50s, Victorian. Like, you know, back in like days like Robin Hood or something like that, you know, it's like there's only these, like, there's these certain things they go back to, but they never go into anything outside. Like, let's go back to Neolithic age, or, you know, let's go to ancient Babylon, or, you know, they don't do anything like that.
Too many CG sets that they wouldn't have time to do. And also, let's not forget about Fairhaven and Janeway creating the perfect man.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well.
So.
I forgot about that one.
He's married. Oh, okay. So let's delete the wife. He's dumb. So let's make him smart. I like this book, so he's going to have to like this book too. All
right. Yeah. So she programs him completely, and then she's like, oh, I'm bored.
And then she,
oh,
yeah.
It's my twin.
It's the male me. Ooh.
Yeah, no.
Just Janeway with
just no.
And she spoke to him in her deep man voice.
Oh no.
Oh God.
But she has a pencil mustache.
It's just what 50 Shades of Grey. Mm-hmm. In Star Trek.
50 Shades of Janeway.
Oh.
Just before it breathes.
50 Shades of Coffee.
Oh my God.
There we go. See, that's better. That's better.
I like that.
Stay there.
That Janeway pours over her 50 shades of self.
Well, yeah, so how did we get off into that?
We're still talking holodeck stuff.
I know.
So
I know.
This is still that.
Not too much of a tangent.
Yeah,
tangents are fun. This is a single episode review, something we've never done before. We've crammed 16 episodes into one of our hour and 10-minute episodes.
Yeah, you're right about that. Yeah.
So,
it's a
tangents are allowed on reviews, guys. So tangents are good. It's fun. Keep the laughs up. Yes, we're like manufacturing this.
So in the end. Sisko has a better voice than Vic Fontaine. He should be a lounge singer.
Vic Fontaine's got a great voice.
He does have a good voice.
But also he does that like thing. I was like,
Well, he's definitely has
back on the racist.
Yeah. He definitely has. He's doing the whole Frank Sinatra. That's what he's going after. So
yeah.
I mean, and he did it well. And so that was my takeaway. Nog's a buffoon, as usual.
He apparently didn't open the lock very well when he was a kid.
Yeah, exactly.
And I loved Odo's arm stretch trick. It's like, oh, yeah, it's nothing. And Cheech is all like, man, he's like doing this crazy thing.
And the other
with
thing.
His arm.
Yeah, but the funny thing is to me was Odo's reaction to the cabaret dancer.
Yes!
Yes!
I wanted to talk
he's
about
just
this.
Staring.
And then
he's never been interested in women ever.
And he's not even interested in Kira. He's just going on for the ride.
He's never seen women move like that before.
Kira's never moved like that.
No. Kira moves in a whole different way. If she started moving like that, I'd run the hell away.
She just moves vertically. She's like a stick moving through space. Doesn't actually, her legs, her back doesn't actually move. Her just legs just go back and forth. You know, Kira doesn't have any motion like that.
But he doesn't have any, like, normal sexual attraction. Like, he doesn't...
What was that about?
Sexual attraction. I mean, that's pretty.
Well, that's a good point.
He was gawking at them. There's a difference between, oh, that's pretty, and being like, oh.
Yeah, and what about all the Dabo girls that showed up in Deep Space Nine?
He never looked at those people twice, and they were wearing even less.
Yeah. I don't know. It was kind of weird. So, yeah, I thought it was odd. And then also Kira's like, oh, enjoy yourself. Like, okay, what world does that ever
happen? Like, you know, like apparently Kira's the perfect woman when you're dating her.
She's like, just enjoy yourself. Have fun. Would you like a lap dance with one of them later?
I'll pay with that money that that Nikki eyes gave me earlier to push down my slinky dress.
Well, it is a hologram, so she can just go in and delete it later.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So, you got to think ahead of the game there.
That's only if she has a Janeway complex.
Well, yeah. You know, all women have a vindictive streak. It's just a matter of how wide.
That's true. But she ran out of her probably in season 6 whenever she complained about the Cardassians for the final time, and then she's kind of gotten over it.
She's like, eh, whatever, Cardassians.
All right, could you say that again? The Skype kind of lost you.
Oh, your vindictive streak never goes away. It just slumbers.
Just it sleeps. It goes into
existence. Hibernates.
Hibernates for a bit.
So if there was a season 8 of Deep Space Nine, it would have come back.
Yeah.
Your apocalypse every other episode.
Because yeah. I Nana Visitor, great actress. She played Kira very well. I just didn't like Kira until season 7. Really, I mean, she had a couple standout episodes like Duet and.
I like some of her. She's not my favorite character, but I like some of the stuff she did. I like that she had to get over her prejudice of Cardassians, even though a lot of it was founded.
It was totally founded, but it got tiring to hear about.
It did get a little bit like, you're like,
she was pretty one note.
I was like, all right, I know it was bad.
She just evolved really slowly as a character.
Yeah, I wish there was season 7 Kira in like season 3. I would have loved
it. At least 4.
Or 4 something. Like, you know, I'm like third or fourth rewatch of Deep Space Nine, and she is remarkably like almost a different character in season 7. And Odo mellowed her out, I think.
You know what I liked with her was. It's way early. It's probably maybe first or second season where they had to get that farmer off the moon.
And the cow jumped over the moon.
Do you remember that one? And she was some old guy and she had to talk him out because they were going to do something with the moon. I can't remember what it was. It was so long ago since I've seen it. I don't know. I'll look it up. But
sounds like one to watch.
No, it's not. But it's just I thought she had a good reaction with them and everything. It was purely her episode. And
I love the episode where she turns into a Cardassian and they're trying to convince her that she's a Cardassian.
Oh yeah, that was a good one. And that then had like the Cardassian dad.
Yeah, and then she actually ended up liking him a lot.
Yeah, she
which was cool. Like seeing her move past her prejudice was great. I hate it when she just drug it back up again. I'm like, oh, I thought you were getting better. I'm getting better. So I think I'll go for a walk.
No, you're not.
Just don't that in a moment.
Yeah. But anyways, so there were some interesting parts to it. It was an interesting episode to see everything move along and see how the characters goof up and see how good old Miles O'Brien gets strip searched. They should have put that. They should have just filmed that. I would have loved to seen that film.
Let's see Colin Meaney's bum.
Yeah.
Vertical bars can we put on one scene?
Well, no. We have seen butt in Star Trek before. The only person to show his butt in Star Trek
Chakotay.
Was yes, Robert Beltran, Chakotay.
I don't know
about that too. My bones, I mean, my family's bones are far away.
My bone is far away.
I must remove my clothes and my phaser. so that these ancient peoples who are relatives to the bones of my family do not see me as a threat.
Is this really happening in this script?
It was really cold. That's an excuse, I'm sure.
It's so cold.
So cold on this jungle planet, the breeze. So, but this probably happens, I don't know, it might have already happened, because this is season 7 of Deep Space Nine, and that was probably like season 3 of Voyager.
Remember.
I don't remember exactly when.
Nobody wants to see Miles O'Brien naked.
What's wrong with Colomini?
He's not, you know, he's a great actor, seems like a nice guy, he just doesn't have a physique like Chakotay.
There's some things you don't want to spoil.
He has the Irish curse.
Enjoy the voice. Let's just not go anywhere else.
Keep it in the fanfic. I saw this great post on one of the Star Trek groups that I'm in, and someone was talking about how the different couples in Star Trek. And someone said something about O'Brien and Keiko, and I was like, someone needs to write some fanfic about O'Brien and Keiko. And I'm like, I bet he talks to her in plant puns to turn her on.
Oh, God.
She's screaming at him.
And then someone wrote, someone responded, and she wrote, O'Brien said something like, I saw some mold the other day, but I wasn't sure to liken it to.
Oh, jeez. So stupid.
And then they embrace and a tender kiss. She goes, am I doing it right? And I'm like, you take direction very well.
Wow. the Kira episode is called Progress, where she's on the moon. That's actually in season 1, episode 15.
She does not make any progress in that episode. I've blocked it out. I now know what you're talking about. That is an awful episode.
I like that episode. It was not like the most monumental episode I've ever seen, by far.
You mean it's like a step above threshold?
Oh, okay. No. No. That is the bottom.
No, actually, the episode worse than Threshold is Shades of Grey. Since we talked about 50 Shades of Grey earlier.
Which one's Shades of Grey?
Shades of Grey is the amazingly horrible clip show of the season finale of season 2 of The Next Generation, where Riker goes down to a planet and a Root thinks he looks sexy. It impregnates him with some virus, and he has flashbacks from all of season 1 and season 2, and that's what the rest of the episode's about. And it cuts out to like them poking needles into his brain and dramatic shots of Troy. I am sorry.
I forgot completely about this episode.
It is the worst episode of Star Trek ever.
Is this first season?
Second season.
It was almost out of my brain.
Yeah. Oh, I've put it back in. You will enjoy it. You will think about it.
I'll probably watch it again just to remind myself about it, because it's been so long.
I skipped that episode on purpose. I don't think I can watch that.
Do you ever like rewatch one of the series, and then there's just like one of them that you just like, you just do not, you're just like, no, I'm not watching that one again.
That episode I will not watch again.
I'll skip that one, and I'm good.
I got the Blu-rays, and I watched all season 1, because, like, you know, season 1's not the greatest, but I still enjoy it. You know, it's decent. And then I watched season 2, and then at the last episode, nope, I'm popping out the disc, I'm starting season 3. I'm not going to watch Shades of Grey.
Really?
I refuse. Really? Yes, I did not watch it, even in high-def splendor. I don't care.
To flash back to a happier point, the writer's name was Felix.
For Shades of Grey?
No, for the
holodeck program.
The program.
Holodeck program.
Felix wrote that one too. He wrote Shades of Grey too. Tortured everyone.
Most of them.
Oh my goodness.
He wrote all of season 2.
Oh wow.
And Pulaski just being horrible to Data.
It's Pulaski. I don't hate Pulaski as much as you hate Pulaski.
What do you think? What do you think about Pulaski?
I'm going to remain neutral on this so far.
Oh,
so if you've seen that, your own opinions.
Taking the easy way out.
See, my take is Pulaski was the female version of McCoy.
And I know people compare her to that, but I just... yes. But, I mean, Bones was mean to Spock, but it was, like, in a playful way.
No, he was awful to Spock.
It was in a playful
way. Oh, agree with
that? She doesn't. Like, I'm sorry, she's mean. Yeah. I love her, but she's mean.
Like, she was mean to Data. She just kept calling it it. She, like Bones never called Spock an it. He's just, oh, you green-blooded hobgoblin. That's there's some affection there.
But Spock was literally a sentient, like, being where she
was.
So was
Data. Measure of a Man proves this, which happens.
Yeah. I'm not...
But he's not androgynous, so you don't refer to something that is obviously masculine in the neutral gender.
Data found out. I mean, Tasha found out.
Yes, he's fully functioning.
Fully functional.
And I am programmed in several techniques.
So
several thousand.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I could see how she was kind of like put off by it, but I mean, that's not... That's...
Oh, and then she programmed the Enterprise to, like, to try to outthink Data. So it took all of the Enterprise making this holodeck character that can outsmart Data.
Right.
And so that's just like, oh, yeah, she created that. She didn't create it. It was actually Geordi, but it was via her prompting. Right. So I'm still going to put the blame on Pulaski.
Right.
So she's just caught up on measuring herself up against everybody else to really be able to see what she is as a character.
Yeah, I also don't think her name was in the front credits. I think she was just always guest star at the end.
Does she?
Yeah. I think so,
you're
yeah.
probably right. Until they brought back Gates McFadden.
Oh, that was good.
Everything turned back to normal.
Yes.
Right.
That was good. So, we don't really have a Riker's scores, so we do have a fail, so we've sort of mentioned it before.
You are the most beautiful woman in the galaxy. You don't know how long I've wanted to tell you that.
But you're afraid.
Yes.
Of me?
Of us, of what we might become. Then you're inviting me in.
I'm not sending you away.
That's more than I expected.
Is it as much as you hoped?
To hope is to recognize the possibility. I had only dreams.
But dreams can be dangerous.
Not these dreams. I dream of a galaxy where your eyes are the stars and the universe worships the night.
Careful. Putting me on a pedestal so high you may not be able to reach me.
Then I'll learn how to fly. You are the heart in my day and the soul in my night.
We lost two more relays. I can't!
Shut up, kid.
And poor Miles O'Brien, he was just trying to follow the plan. He was gonna just keep the guy busy, and
he kept him busy.
Not the guy he was supposed to keep busy.
Mr. O'Brien, could you bend over for me?
I wonder if he was looking for his off switch.
Wrong button.
Or his on switch. Yes.
I had to bring back the Data joke.
Yes, the Data joke.
Data joke.
His on and off switch is his butt. So, yeah, poor Miles O'Brien. He literally failed. Probably in the worst way. He was he was brought back in the back room.
And legally molested.
Well, it's like
it's like strip search him. It's like you know, it's not just cuff him, you know, search him, strip search him.
Well, nowadays it's almost like going to the airport and just getting a flight. You know, they pretty much strip search you like every fourth person going through.
Oh man, like I when I went to visit my family once, I
you got strip searched?
No, but no, I had my hair long like it is now. I had this actual Pulp Fiction shirt on that I'm wearing right now. It was winter time, so in Buffalo, I had my big trench coat on. I went through just the metal detector. I didn't go through the thing that scans you or they see you naked. I didn't get packed down and they get nothing. So on my trip home, my family doesn't like my hair long. My mom cuts hair, so they cut my hair. I was wearing a different shirt. It was the South, so I wasn't wearing my coat on me. Mm-hmm. I didn't look ominous at all. So I get the pat down.
Oh, did you?
And my parents are waiting for me to get on the plane, so I get pat down in front of my parents.
Oh, man.
This is uncomfortable to begin with. My parents, I just see my parents like looking out the window.
My mom, my dad! He's got my finger. He's got his finger on my bum.
Soon. No.
He's going south.
No. I'm too young for this. Mommy, make him stop.
Oh, no. So,
Mommy, do something.
So you were saying you relay to Miles O'Brien here.
I didn't get strip searched, but it's definitely awkward. At least O'Brien didn't have Mommy and Pappy O'Brien to watch.
That would be extremely awkward if you had Mom and Dad watching that.
No, he just had several other guards.
Yeah.
And they were unbuckling their... No.
Whoa! Hey, now.
Look at that white...
You know, they got to make sure nothing's up
Irish
there, right?
Ass.
They got another means for that, man. I won't have to pull the there's a lady present card, but there it is.
Oh, poor Miles. He never was the same. He started drinking. That was it. That was it for Miles.
And after everything resets, O'Brien takes the longest to show up to meet everyone and see Cisco sing. And Jillian's like, where have you been? And Ryan's like, I don't want to talk about it. So dark, dark things happened.
But he's making calls at Counselor Troy that night. I've got to talk about something.
Oh, he's like, oh. He probably calls Barkley first to find out where she is. Because she's probably most up to date. He's probably most up to date on her location.
He knows where she is. He knows he's faster than the Enterprise computer.
No, but Ezri Dax is the now the counselor on.
I know.
So he can.
I was just making up.
He can say, "Could you be in your bunny suit while we talk about this?"
Yeah, right. I don't even think that's going to help poor Miles. I think he's got some time to process what's happened to him and decide if he's actually if he's going to go on stay straight or he's going to go the other way. You know, maybe this has changed his mind. And he leaves Keiko, and he finds out he
really does sort of kind of want to, because she's gone for a lot of, like, season 6 and 7, and whenever she comes back and he can't hang out with Julian anymore, he's definitely sad.
He's like,
why can't my Keiko be more like you?
I just want to kiss you, Julian. You're so hot.
Well, the first time Garrick appeared in the show, he was told to act sexually attracted to Bashir. So that's an interesting... when you go back and watch that.
That's true. I forgot about that. I think maybe Miles and Bashir are having a little...
Hiding down in the foxhole at the dull Davy Crockett reenactment.
That's why they wanted to go to the Alamo so bad.
The Alamo was just their code word for gay sex, and they were trying to get Vic Fontaine into it.
Can you feel the air quotes?
he's there to sing to them while they're...
No, Vic Fontaine was coming. He's like, oh, boys, I don't look good in buckskin.
He did say that.
Yeah, he knew it. He knew what they're talking about.
And, man.
Oh, this is actually very layered. I'm liking this. Also. We've cracked a nut here.
But Vic was all about it at the end, though. Remember, he volunteered to go with them anytime.
Yeah, he's
so
like, I'll go
anywhere.
Something
happened in the back room.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think something did happen. So
apparently, getting beat by Cheech is worse than getting beat by O'Brien.
No,
Miles.
Well, he's going to get beaten in other ways. So, wow. I think we've really opened a door here. I think we've uncracked the writer's true intention on this whole thing. The Alamo was a code word for their hookup, gay sex. And, hey, Keiko, we're just going to do the Alamo program again, okay? Okay, you boys have fun. And then it's all of a sudden Brokeback Mountain all over again.
And the thing is, like, they do all sorts of programs together, and they don't like people coming to visit. So them asking Vic is a very special thing.
Oh, yeah. They were like, wouldn't it be great to have Vic? Hey, they're laying in their tent by the Alamo and going, hey, Jillian. Yeah, Miles. Wouldn't it be great to have Vic Fontaine with us? Ooh. Oh, that would be so hot.
Oh,
let's
man.
Do it.
I wonder if we can make his hair not gray. Or make it 50 shades of gray.
Lost five more listeners.
Hey, we still have the crickets. We're good.
Yeah.
I can hear them. We're good.
Yeah, I know. There's like three listeners.
They're
still
echoing
listening.
Loud.
And those three listeners can't actually hit the stop button on their device.
No,
the screen is cracked. How do I turn this thing off?
They've accidentally pulled out the headphone jack and it's playing it throughout their workplace loudly.
And they're getting fired and escorted out their office right now.
Yep. It is your fault that three people have now lost their jobs and cannot get any sort of work or support for their families.
Well, it's because they have to write down why they were fired.
Synthaholics destroyed my life.
These guys right here. They did it.
Hey, you're with us tonight, Faith. So.
You're culpable too.
So if they did this on any other episodes, it was just us. But tonight, special
military. We're all going down.
So our three listeners are now fired. You're not listening to us.
More time to listen.
Exactly.
Those
so
that means they're left. Please donate bail money to us. We will need it in the future.
Yes. All right. So have we done enough damage?
It's quite possible. But I think we'll manage to do more next time when we talk about Voyager, Scorpion, Part 1 and 2, where we introduce the best character on USS Voyager, 7 of 9.
There you go. So, we're going to be talking about Scorpion. We'll talk about the introduction of her character and then just the...
And about how much resistance is futile. I wonder if Julian ever said that to O'Brien.
Resistance is futile, Miles. Just give in to me. You know, I'm actually genetically augmented to be a little better at things than you're used to.
I can see in your eyes. With my genetic eyes.
Oh my god. Right.
Anyway.
If they weren't damaged before, they are now. Hold on.
Ooh, thank you guys for listening. We've got Scorpion Part 1 and 2 coming up next time. Hopefully Faith will also be able to join us when we talk Scorpion Part 1 and 2.
And,
absolutely. She'll never return a call again.
Hey, we haven't been back.
What? This is the worst ever.
What? How?
Oh, all right.
No, there's been no grandpas on grandchildren.
No, we haven't.
This episode.
Yeah, we haven't talked about that.
No, so. No grandpas on grandchildren. So that's good.
All right.
So, thank you guys for listening. You will enjoy this episode. Resistance is futile. Live long and prosper. Thank you for listening. All our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or follow them on Twitter at warp11. You can find us online at synthaholics.com. You can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. Our Twitter is at synthaholicduo. If you want to follow us individually, you can follow me at david_j_duncan and Aaron at blackbird2004. If you liked our podcast, please subscribe to us on iTunes. We can also be found on Stitcher. Please tell your friends about the show. Also, if you could leave us a review and a rating, that would help us out so much. It'll help us learn how to improve so we can reach more of our fellow Trek fans. We'd love to hear your feedback. Live long and prosper. Country boys born and raised at the stars we did gaze. The next morning he left stinking of gin. Well, McCoy, my boy, come mix me a drink. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink. And we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shed our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Julian, you are the best drinking partner I've ever had.
Only drinking partner?
Ooh.
Oh my.
Oh dear God, what did I just get dropped back into?